Center.
The following is a paid program. The opinions expressed are solely those of the sponsor and not necessarily those of WFAS or its advertisers.
Peace of mind will let men cross.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. I'm your host, Bernie Crooks, from the law firm Littman Crooks, and welcome to the first show of 2010. Boy, it's hard to believe how quickly the time goes by, but I guess we're all ready for this wonderful spring weather we're having. Tonight, we've got two very, very special guests. I've got Harriet Schleifer and Adrian Arkentaki, and they're both attorneys at the law firm of Littman Crooks. Welcome, Harriet.
Good evening, Bernie.
And how are you, Adrian?
Very good, Bernie.
All right. Now, this is quite a tag team we've got here. You ladies are fighting a good fight, right, Harriet? Fighting a good fight for the kids who can't do it?
Absolutely. Somebody has to be their voice.
Now, why, Adrian? Why does somebody have to make sure that kids have advocacy and somebody fighting for them at school?
Well, I think it's important for parents and for professionals. The kids are our future, and every child can learn, no matter what the disability is. So it's important to have a voice for these children that can't speak for themselves.
All right, so that's one of the things that our country gives us, the right to a free and appropriate public education, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so Harriet, the free part I get, basically that means you go to school and you pay your taxes and the government makes sure you get the free education. But what's appropriate? Does it mean that I get to go to the best private school in the community?
I wish that were so, but it's not. Appropriate is based upon what the student needs to succeed in terms of meeting the requirements of the general education curriculum, as well as any special services that may be needed if the child is classified and eligible to receive those services. So it's a very individual case, and appropriateness is defined student to student.
So Adrian, what might be appropriate for one person might not be appropriate for someone else?
Sure, and under the regs, the regulations of the Commissioner of New York, the State Education Department, and also the federal law, the laws were intended to do is to give every child with special needs a unique education plan, an IEP, an individualized education program. So what would be unique and individual for you might not be the same for me.
Now, you mentioned child with special needs. Doesn't every parent think their child's special? So does this apply to everybody?
No, it applies to students and children under the age of 21 who have special needs that prevent them from gaining educational benefit, and that's really the standard. So you could literally have a child who is blind or deaf, and if the committee deems that this disability does not affect their ability to gain educational benefit or interrupts their education, then they would not be considered eligible for special education services.
Right, so, Harriet, Adrian brought up a good point. Sometimes kids have hearing impairments or visual impairments, and they might not be classified. But is there another way they can get help? Is there something called Section 504?
Yes, there is.
How does that work?
The Section 504 plan of the 1973 Vocational Rehabilitation Act is an access plan. It's a civil rights law, and it guarantees that students with special needs or an individual with special needs can have accommodations that will level the playing field for them so that they can succeed and have the same chance at benefiting as though they were a typically developing student.
So if you think your child has special needs and the district does their review and it turns out they don't qualify as special needs, the party may not be over, right? Because they still may qualify
Absolutely.
For these other benefits.
Correct. But oftentimes, if you qualify for a student under the 504 plan, you may also be eligible for IDEA protection, and I would always advise a parent to ask for the IDEA benefits.
Now, one of the things that I always find interesting about being a parent is they don't give you a manual. They don't tell you how to do certain things. They don't tell you what to do if the kid does one thing or if he beats up his brother. There's not a book on, you know, how to do it. How do parents know that, or how are they supposed to know that they have rights and their children have rights, and how are they supposed to know what to do?
Well, I'll answer part of that. Under the law, the districts are really supposed to step up to the plate and give the parents information on if they suspect, if the parent suspects or anybody that's working with the child suspects that there's a disability, what they are supposed to do. In addition to that, I think it's important for parents to take an active role. And if they suspect that something is going on, such as a speech impairment or, you know, the child is just not progressing appropriately, they're not, you know, walking right away or speaking right away or developing like a typical child, they you know, should reach out to a pediatrician, to some of the advocacy organizations. Here in Westchester, many of the counties, we have early intervention services that can help a child really early on with some of the things that, you know, happen and with some of the disabilities.
So Harriet, the early intervention, that ends, right, at some point?
The early intervention benefits usually are from birth to two. And when the child turns 3 years old, the school system becomes responsible for identifying any delays that the child may be exhibiting, and they're responsible for putting together a program which is reimbursed to them by the county. And then at the age of five, typically, they move from the preschool services to school-age services. So they'll go from the CPSE, the Preschool Special Education Program, to the CSE, Committee on Special Education Program.
Now, you guys are lawyers, Adrian. Why does somebody have to hire a lawyer to get something that the law says you're entitled to? I mean, we're talking about a child, a school district, a parent. Why do people need lawyers?
I think that people come to a lawyer at different steps in the game. Okay, we have parents who come in who just, they know enough to know that they do have rights and that there's some protections under the law, and they come to us to find out exactly what those rights are. And then there are some folks that come to us because they have gone to the school district, they have lobbied for their child, and they know their child best, and they feel like the district is just not listening. And there's a stalemate there as to what the district feels is appropriate and what the parent feels is appropriate. Many times they come to a lawyer to, number one, find out exactly what the law says, whether they have a good case to lobby for whatever services they believe the child needs, or there's just a big stalemate with the district. So it depends.
So one size doesn't fit all here. Some people get lawyers involved in the beginning. Others might be able to do some things on their own. Or perhaps, Harriet, you've worked with people who are advocates, right? Explain their role.
The role of the advocate would be to, and for the attorney as well, to educate the parents as to what their rights are, the rights of the children, the rights of the parent, because under IDEA, parents have rights as well, and to then approach the school district and educate the folks at the school district. The people, administrators and teachers don't always know what the entitlements are for these students. And it may be, you know, just lack of exposure and nothing, you know, that's maliciously intended. But so the role of the advocate would be to bring the family and the school district, hopefully together, educate both as to what the child is entitled to.
Now, Adrian, you've worked with wonderful advocates. In fact, we have a terrific one, Margaret, at the firm, who you've worked with for many years. Just explain, like, if you're working on a case, you know, some of the things that Margaret would do and some of the things you would do, just so the listeners can get a sense of the different tasks performed by an advocate and when they might need to press that button and call the attorney.
Okay. Margaret's role really is to go to the Committee on Special Education meeting. What she usually does is ask the parent for all the records, since the child's been in special education. She reviews the records. She talks to the parent about some strategies that might work in the classroom. She talks about different programs that are available that the parent might not know of, because that parent is within that one district. But Margaret serves, you know, maybe 20 or 30 districts. So she can really tell the parent there are different programs out there, there are different strategies. Then what Margaret would do is sometimes she just serves as sort of counsel to the parent. She's counseling the parent on what they should do at the special education committee meeting. In other instances, she will go there, and as Harriet says, she brings everybody to the table, and she will coordinate the services. She will make sure that whatever is agreed upon at that meeting is implemented, because the follow-up is really crucial. Then there may come a point, and you know, I can speak for what we do at our firm. Margaret will say to me, this is really beyond what I can do as an advocate. Perhaps the placement is not appropriate. Perhaps even with the follow-up, the services are not being implemented. Or we feel that the IEP, the Individualized Education Program, is not suited for the child. When she gets to a point where she feels as an advocate, she can really not bring everybody together or resolve the problem, the last piece of this is whether the family has to file for a due process hearing. And, you know, as we all know, and Harriet knows, and Bernie, you know also, that it is a very long, process. You really need an attorney to initiate that type of thing. And that you should really get all your ducks in order, for lack of a better term, before you do something like that. But that's where I would step in when we initiate a request for due process. Do you want to add anything?
You know, I would. When it comes to disciplinary issues, I think the law allows the student the right to representation, to legal representation at a disciplinary hearing, and I would suggest that parents take that path and don't try and resolve a disciplinary hearing on their own.
All right, hold that thought. We're going to get back to disciplinary hearings and also some of the ins and outs of a due process hearing, but we've got to take a short break. We'll be right back with the Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney Show after this short message.
All his life, little Stevie has been special. When he grows up, he probably won't be able to live on his own or work to support himself. Stevie's parents already worry about what will become of their sweet boy after they're gone. Kim was a corporate executive until a drunk driver ended her career and nearly her life. Now she has a traumatic brain injury, a sizable settlement, but no clear plan for the future. Stevie and Kim could each use a special needs trust to secure their finances, care, and maximum independence while letting them keep their public benefits such as SSI and Medicaid. Who can set up a special needs trust? The law firm of Littman Crooks, members of the Special Needs Alliance, a national network of disability and public benefits lawyers. If you or someone you love has special needs, greater peace of mind is just a phone call away. Call Littman Crooks today, 684-2100, or visit littmancrooks.com. Because special people need special plans.
Peace of mind with Littman Crooks.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Bernie Crooks from the law firm Littman Crooks, based right here in White Plains. We've also got offices in Fishkill and in Manhattan, New York. And you can visit us online at littmancrooks.com. Tonight, our special guests are Harriet Schleifer and Adrian Arkentaki from the law firm Littman Crooks, and they specialize in special education law. Before the break, we were talking about a concept called a due process hearing. It sounds like something pretty fancy schmancy there, Adrian. Do people need to go to due process hearings a lot? Is it something that is a last resort? Or explain the process to us.
Okay, I believe that it, you know, we would like it to be a last resort. We would like parents and school districts and other professionals to come together at a committee on special education meeting. But obviously, I do a lot of the due process hearings in the office, and so I think that they have their place. Parents who just have had no luck resolving issues, and sometimes districts who have no luck resolving issues, are really forced to initiate due process hearings. Years ago, it was set up more to be an informal type of proceeding, but it has gotten much more formal, and the parties involved, and I like to say that I do feel, and I agree with Harriet, that a parent who is going to initiate a request for due process should absolutely consult with an attorney to do so. The the process is that you would initiate this request in writing. The regulations regarding how to do it are set out very clearly on the New York State Department of Education website. We know it very well. But basically, you would put together a request. The attorney puts together a request and says, this is a request for due process. This is what we believe the child needs. This is what we believe the district has done incorrectly. These are the regulations that have been violated. And this is the relief that we're seeking. This is what we want done. We want speech 3 times a week. We want the child to get ABA therapy every day. We want a different placement. We want the child to be placed at all. Maybe a child's on home instruction, and we know that's not appropriate. We want a residential placement. Whatever it is, you need to give the hearing officer and the district a chance to look at what, you know, what the parent really wants.
And the reason we want this is because it's necessary in order for the district to provide the appropriate education.
Absolutely.
It's not like we're just picking things off a wish list and saying, you know, give me one from column A and one from column 3. There's support for the fact that the child needs this in order to have the appropriate education.
Absolutely, and it is different in every case, but it shouldn't be a guessing game. You need to have the district and you need to have the hearing officer know exactly what you believe as the attorney and the parent that would be appropriate for that
child.
Now,
this can get expensive, right? Because due process, you know, sounds like going to court or having some kind of hearing, so the bills can get higher than just going to a CSE meeting. Who ends up footing the bill for this?
This is the typical lawyer answer, it depends. So in New York State right now, except in one type of case, the burden is on the school district to prove that the program and the services are appropriate.
That changed, right? That has been going back and forth for a while. Okay.
So the federal regs say that the burden is on the parent, except that in certain states, and we are one of the lucky ones, that the burden is on the school district to prove that the program is appropriate. There is a fee-shifting provision in New York, and the way the fee-shifting provision works is if you prevail at due process as the parent, you have a right to submit the attorney's fees that you have incurred to the district for payment. So in some instances, the district can, you know, be liable for footing the attorney's fees. It can be very expensive, so you have to be sure that you've taken the appropriate measures and the appropriate actions to try and resolve the problem. I think I should, I want to mention that in New York State, what has to happen is after you submit a request for due process within a certain amount of days, the district must hold a resolution session. And in that session, it gives the opportunity of the parties to get together and resolve the issue. So hopefully during that resolution session, the parties will come to some kind of agreement. More often than not, I have seen that it doesn't. And we are forced to continue, you know, our quest for due process.
All right, Harriet, let me ask you something. Does this sound fair? The district obviously must have lawyers because unlike the parent who goes to one CSE meeting a year, the district goes to, you know, dozens if not hundreds. Is this fair that they've got lawyers lined up ready to defend the district and then the parents sort of out there wondering whether or not they should, you know, pony up some money to hire a lawyer?
I don't know if it's a question of fair, but certainly the parent is at a disadvantage. And often the parent doesn't have a clue as to what's wrong with the program. They know that their child isn't succeeding, but they don't know why, and they don't know what the child is entitled to under the law. So they are at a disadvantage, clearly. And in terms of the research, in terms of, you know, any outside information from a psychologist or a psychiatrist or a speech provider, they're clearly at a disadvantage because they have to go and hire all those individuals, and it can be at a great cost at which the family can't afford to incur.
Do you think that's one of the reasons why New York State went back to having the district bearing the burden of proof?
I would think that that's exactly the reason.
Yeah, because it seemed that my recollection was there was a Supreme Court case that came down, I think it was Schaefer versus West, which made it really unfair because I think that the deck is stacked against the child and the parents anyway, and then to have to make them bear the burden.
Yeah, it's a little David and Goliath.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, we want to get back to disciplinary hearings, which Harriet mentioned, but we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with Harriet Schleifer and Adrian Arkentucky.
I can't believe we're packing all this up. Is the storage space big enough?
Mom will just sell what doesn't fit.
We can't tell Dad we sold a house. It'll make things worse.
There must have been another way to pay for his care.
She said they talked about a plan, but once he had the stroke, it was too late.
Well, they're going to move him to a new facility.
Mom, that's over an hour away.
There's nothing I can do. I'll find an apartment. Maybe I'll get a job.
A job?
I have no choice. Dad can't be left alone.
Peace of mind with Littman Gross.
Nobody knows what the future holds, so make sure your assets and loved ones are protected. Elder Law addresses the quality of life needs of people over 50, including long-term care, estate planning, and special needs trusts. Plan for your future. Call Littman Crooks today or learn more at littmancrooks.com.
Littman Crooks, protecting your loved ones and your life savings. Call 684-2100.
Peace of mind with Littman Crooks.
That's littmancrooks.com or call 684-2100.
Welcome back to Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. We're heard right here on WFAS AM 1230 every Thursday evening from 6:05 to 6:35 p.m. And each week we try to bring you special guests who are knowledgeable in the field of education law, special needs planning, and elder law. And tonight we've got two top-notch attorneys from the firm of Littman Crooks talking to us about special education advocacy. And before the last break, Harriet Schleifer mentioned a disciplinary hearing. And Harriet, I'd like you to talk to us a little bit more about what a disciplinary hearing is. Is this where my kid gets caught with drugs in the parking lot or he's accused of bullying another student? Tell us about what a disciplinary hearing is all about.
Well, there are school codes of conduct that districts have to publish every year and give copies to the parents of the children in the district, and which sets out conduct that is prohibited by the students. There are also state laws that list behaviors that are inappropriate in the school district for which a student can be disciplined, and some of the disciplinary measures can be detention, can be in-school suspension, and can be out-of-school suspension, which gets very serious. A student who violates a code of conduct can be suspended by the principal for up to a maximum of 5 days. If the principal feels that the student needs to be out longer, they have to go to a superintendent's hearing. At this point, the student has the chance of losing their rights to attend school for some significant period of time, and so this is why I would never advise a family to go into such a hearing without the assistance of an attorney. If there's a problem relating to the police outside of school because of the same infraction, then you're going to want to handle the superintendent's hearing in a particular way, because anything that's said at the superintendent's hearing, which is taped or transcribed, can then be used by an outside agency. So you really have to exercise a strategy and protect the rights of the student from the beginning of the hearing in preparation, you know, throughout to the end of the hearing.
Now, is the code of conduct set by the principal of each school or is it statewide?
The code of conduct is set by each school district. So there's a policy in the Board of Education, you know, must oversee and implement and is responsible for that code of conduct. And they're supposed to give notice of that code of conduct to the parents as well.
And if a child does get disciplined, does it appear on their permanent record?
It will be the disciplinary incident reports will be in a record. It's usually kept in the guidance counselor's office. And very often maybe apart from the other educational records.
So it's not necessarily something that a prospective college might see?
Typically, a guidance counselor who is assisting the student in the college application process would not be sending the discipline record along with it. But that's not to ask whether colleges in their applications don't request that information of the student.
Now, are there different rules for disciplinary cases for kids who also have special needs?
Yes. Kids who have special needs get the added protection of a meeting in between the fact-finding phase of the superintendent's hearing and the penalty phase of the superintendent's hearing. And it's called the manifestation determination. And it's comprised of people who may not be exactly the people who would sit on a CSE, but they would be likewise comprised. Students who are not
classified who then end up at a superintendent's hearing may have the protection of the manifestation determination if during the superintendent's hearing you can show that the school district should have known that there was a presumption that there was a disability there. And that's why it's important to gather all your records and be more thoroughly knowledgeable about the student's history than anybody else at the table. Because if you can show that the parent had either made a written request for a referral or that another staff member made a request to a supervisor or the CSE chair, or there's a third ground which escapes me at the moment, but if you can show one of those three grounds, then you are afforded the rights as though the student were already classified.
Right, so just quickly, because we've got to go to another break, but if the manifestation of the behavior that resulted in the disciplinary hearing ends up being due to or stems from the disability, how does that change things?
Well, the student can't be penalized for the disability. So if you can show a manifestation, then the student is returned to school, and, for example, a functional behavioral assessment would be either updated or one would be implemented to develop a behavioral intervention plan so that this behavior doesn't happen again.
Okay, this is Bernie Crooks, host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. We'll be right back to close up after this short break.
All his life, little Stevie has been special. When he grows up, he probably won't be able to live on his own or work to support himself. Stevie's parents already worry about what will become of their sweet boy after they're gone. Kim was a corporate executive until a drunk driver ended her career and nearly her life. Now she has a traumatic brain injury, a sizable settlement, but no clear plan for the future. Stevie and Kim could each use a special needs trust to secure their finances, care, and maximum independence while letting them keep their public benefits such as SSI and Medicaid. Who can set up a special needs trust? The law firm of Littman Crooks, members of the Special Needs Alliance, a national network of disability and public benefits lawyers. If you or someone you love has special needs, greater peace of mind is just a phone call away. Call Littman Crooks today, 684-2100, or visit littmancrooks.com, because special people need special plans.
Peace of mind with Littman Crooks.
Welcome back to the show. This is Bernie Crooks, host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. We're from the law firm Littman Crooks at littmancrooks.com. And before the break, we were talking with Harriet about disciplinary hearings. And I guess sometimes, if it's true, Adrian, sometimes you can get some good out of some bad. Is it possible that having a disciplinary hearing could lead to some good things?
Yes. And the reason I say that is because Harriet and I, who are working closely together right now, have talked about these disciplinary hearings and the fact that what Harriet likes to do is look at, again, the whole child. And a lot of times what happens is there are these disciplinary issues, and once she peels back the layers, and that's exactly what you called it, Harriet, she has found that the child has special education needs that were never addressed. And so we have a chance now not only to resolve the disciplinary issues, but to also look at the child's special education needs and implement a good program with the district. So the good thing that comes out of it is that we can really address the special education needs.
So, Harry, it's fair to say that sometimes these special ed issues are lurking and not brought to the forefront until you have the disciplinary hearing?
That's correct. And I think the legislators also understood that, because the commissioner's regulations 201.6 entitle a suspended student to have an expedited CSE evaluation. That puts them right up to the top of the list, and oftentimes a disability will be unearthed that wasn't previously known, and you're right. I think the legislators knew that that could be a possibility, and so they put that regulation in.
It couldn't have been the legislators we currently have, could it? Knew what they were doing? Okay, Adrian, spring is in the air, and for a special education lawyer, that means CSE time of year, right?
Yes.
Why is that?
at least once a year, the CSE has to do an annual review, and we're always planning for the program in the next September. So it is a very busy time because parents need to get ready for their CSE meetings. And if you would like me to take 1 second to talk about how they can get ready, I would do it. 1 minute. They can review the reports from this year. They can review progress reports. They can set a meeting with all the teachers that are working with the child to make sure they get feedback. Ask for anything that will be presented at the special education committee meeting so that they have a chance part of the meeting to review everything. And talk to professionals, get a good evaluations done and look at programs for the next year. And the most important thing is if the child is able, ask the child how they've been doing this year and what they foresee them doing next year.
So those are some very important tips, things you can do in preparation and not wait until you get the letter saying that your meeting's in 2 weeks.
Yes.
And then you have to scramble, you have to adjourn it. And yes.
This way
you're more prepared.
Absolutely.
Now, Harriet, just in a closing thought here, you've been doing this a long time. Is this worth it? I mean, the parents that get involved, are they beating their heads against the wall, or do they sometimes actually get results?
I think a parent who does their homework can get results. And part of doing their homework, in addition to the tips that Adrian was talking about, is writing down on a piece of paper what your thoughts are, what your expectations are for the child, how you see them as a learner, and come in with that paper so that when you sit down at the table, you don't get flustered and forget to bring up the points that you came in to talk about.
And I think that's probably one of the areas where an advocate can help, right?
Absolutely.